Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, November 2nd, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, life after prison for a man who's been out for a year. Governor Mark Dayton's legal team says a district court judge would be interfering if he reinserts himself into a lawsuit over the legislature's budget. Brian Baxter reports.
In new court filings, Dayton's lawyers object to an attempt by the Republican-led legislature to free up money for operations while the high court decides what to do. The legislature has been using reserves to pay its bills since early October, amid a dispute over Dayton's line-item vetoes of House and Senate budgets. Those reserves could start running out as soon as next month, leading to layoffs and other interruptions. The Supreme Court could rule any day on whether Dayton's vetoes will stand or if the legislature will have its budget restored. Until then, lawmakers want a lower court judge to step in. Dayton's side says doing so would add unnecessary confusion and uncertainty. Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
A state human services official told lawmakers yesterday that he's willing to revisit a controversial new fingerprinting requirement for the teenage children of daycare providers. Tim Pugmire reports.
Members of the Minnesota Association of Child Care Professionals are among those complaining about the new law, which they contend is unnecessary and overly intrusive. Children ages 13 to 17 are already subject to background checks. But Department of Human Services Deputy Commissioner Chuck Johnson told a state Senate committee that the change is needed to align with federal law.
The fingerprint really is the way to get to federal criminal information. And what you lose without it is the ability to look at whether there was a crime that happened in another state.
Johnson said he wants to find a workable resolution. The committee chair, Republican Senator Jim Abler, said changes will be made next session. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
After two unsuccessful runs against Rick Nolan, Republican Stuart Mills says he will not try again in 2018. Mills made the announcement on Facebook yesterday. Mills is a member of the family that built the Mills Fleet Farm business. He lost to Nolan, a Democrat, by about 2,000 votes last year. That even as Republican Donald Trump garnered more votes than Hillary Clinton in the northeastern Minnesota district. Minsure says day one of open enrollment for 2018 non-group health plans is going smoothly. As of mid-afternoon yesterday, there had been 20,000 website visits and call wait times averaged just 1 second. Mark Zedeklik has more.
CEO Allison O'Toole says call center volume has been strong. So too, she says, have visits to a comparison shopping tool on the website. Minsure had difficulty in previous open enrollment periods, but has seen steady improvement since it first started selling plans in 2013.
We're really pleased with our traffic. We've had a smooth and steady start to our fifth open enrollment period.
O'Toole says people who need to buy on the individual market should start with Minsure. It's the only place to obtain federal assistance to help cover the cost of premiums. Open enrollment in Minnesota ends in mid-January. It runs a month longer than the federal healthcare.gov open enrollment period. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
When Elizer Darris was locked up, he was just 15 years old. He had committed the most horrific of acts. He killed a man. A year ago, Darris was released from prison after spending more than half his life there. Reporter Laura Ewan has been following his journey to find out what it's been like for him to re-enter a world he had left as a troubled teen.
Elizer Darris is the very picture of a fresh start.
Can grab some chairs for us.
He greets me at his South Minneapolis apartment in a creased button-down, dark-washed jeans, closely cropped hair. It's his first full day out, and he's already gotten rid of all of his prison clothes.
It's in the trash, actually. I think he's taken and just tossed his shoes, shirts, socks. It's gone.
Darris left the free world as an eighth grader. He's returning as a 32-year-old. He and his wife, Shondell, are sitting on a couch in their living room. They got married while he was in prison. So now they're finally reunited. They're kind of like newlyweds, living under the same roof for the first time. But Darris says everything feels natural.
I'm just happy to be here, happy to be free, happy to have woken up with a lot of natural light in my apartment. It's a beautiful apartment. I have a beautiful wife.
Just yesterday, Shondell picked him up. After 17 years behind bars, Darris wasted no time with an emotional scene. He says his first words to his wife were,
"Let's go."
Yes, really fast.
I said, let's go. I almost had to put my hand in the nape of her back and push her forward. Did I even turn around and look at it again?
No, I thought you'd like want to go outside and like look at the trees and nature, and you were like, no.
Trees and nature?
Even though it's a prison, it has a really beautiful landscape.
No, I didn't want to see the trees. I didn't want to see the birds. I wanted to see the road.
He says he worried that, like, maybe the prison guards would realize there'd been a mistake and order him back to his cell. After all, Darris almost never made it out. He was what they call a lifer. After the murder, Darris was certified as an adult and originally sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole. Today, there are 34 offenders serving life sentences in Minnesota who were juveniles when they committed their crimes. Darris appealed a first-degree murder charge and won. A second-degree murder charge stuck, and he was resentenced to 25 years. In Minnesota, with good time, inmates can be let out after serving two-thirds of their sentence and finish the remaining third on supervised release. So after 17 years in prison, when Darris was released, he wasn't about to look back. But getting here was a long time coming.
No, I was a terrible inmate. Terrible. I had plenty of fights.
When Darris entered prison, he hadn't finished the eighth grade. He had a quick temper. He says he spent a lot of time in solitary confinement, or what he calls the hole. And it was in the hole, at the St. Cloud prison, a few years into his sentence, when...
I remember we were in having a riot. And
you were in the riot?
I was leading the riot.
Darris says the inmates were starting fires, shaking bars, doing what he calls unspeakable things, like throwing cartons of bodily fluids at corrections officers. He could get a glimpse of the chaos from the tiny horizontal slat of his cell.
I remember being in this riot, watching a fire burn in front of my cell, thinking to myself, yeah, I never felt so free in my life. I feel free watching this thing burn down.
But the feeling of freedom shifted to a feeling of suffocation. Smoke billowed into his cell.
And then I remember shaking the doors and saying, turn the fans on! Turn them fans on! And so here I am, yelling and screaming at the same COs who we were attacking to virtually save my life now, right?
And it wasn't just the smoke. Darris had flooded his cell by repeatedly flushing the toilet. There was toilet water everywhere.
So I had to hit the deck as the smoke was coming down. And then I remember on the ground thinking to myself, I don't want to die like this. I haven't done nothing with my life.
How old were you then?
Maybe 19. I was 19. You know, and I just had a wake of destruction. You know, and I found myself laying in a little bitty cell in a little bitty town I never heard of, in a little bitty prison, in toilet water. I just didn't want to die like that. That was a critical turning point, you know, in which I decided to just kind of like get it together.
For one thing, he started paying attention to older inmates who had reached out to mentor him.
Well, I gave some tough love. I told him that my time is valuable.
That's Willie Lloyd, who was also incarcerated for murder when he took Darris under his wing.
I think the light was starting to come on for him. And I can see that he wanted something more.
And Elizer Darris did want something more. While incarcerated, Darris got his GED, a point of pride that he talked about years later when he accepted his Associate of Arts degree at the Stillwater Prison.
Please join me in welcoming Elizer Darris.
If you haven't gathered by now, Darris can tell a story. He was selected to speak at his college graduation ceremony back in 2015.
Good morning, everyone.
He talked about how when he was incarcerated at 15, he figured he would spend the rest of his natural life in prison. That's actually what the sentencing judge told him. But the education he got behind bars led him to believe his future was changing.
I opened up this envelope and I pulled my GED out. And I remember running my finger across the elevated letters over my name, and three words rocketed through my body. I did it.
Yes, yes.
I did it.
He says that GED filled him with a kind of pride that saved his life. It told him he still had worth, and that confidence would carry him to newer heights. But it's tough to reconcile Eli Darris, the person, with the very worst act of his life. We'll need to back up to 1998. Darris was 14, living near St. Louis. He was flunking out of school, getting into fights. He didn't know who his dad was. He was angry. He says he attempted suicide. Then a carnival came through town.
I was walking down the Midway with some friends, and, you know, one of the carnival guys asked if we wanted to, you know, run the joint. And I said, sure.
So Darius ran away twice to join the carnival. And this crew had criminal elements similar to a gang. At one point, while traveling near East Grand Forks, Minnesota, Darius says he realized another carnival worker, a man in his 40s named Cornelius Rogers, had stolen some of his money. Darius and another worker drove with Rogers out into the countryside. Court documents say Darius struck Rogers in the head three times with a tire jack. They left his body in a ditch. I reached out to the victim's family, and they expressed disbelief that Darius could ever change after committing such a brutal crime. Cornelius Rogers' brother-in-law, Kenneth Connolly, didn't know Darius had been released.
I can't accept that. The picture, it don't look right. I don't care if you're 13, 14, if you commit a murder like he committed and 15 years old and you out at 32, come on.
Elizer Darius says he doesn't expect the family to forgive him or to believe he deserves a second chance. He says all he can do is focus on doing right, not just for himself and his family, but for his whole community.
And then hope, not demand, but hope that people would see that and that his family members would see the absolute effort that I have put in and that I do continue to put in order to make things different.
Darius says he won't let the worst mistake of his life define him. And in his first year out, he says, his story is just beginning. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.